The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome, everyone, again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as every week, I'm going to be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures. Those rich, of course, as you know, with the essence of constant renewal. I am energized, and I am really ready to get into our conversation today. I think you're going to find that the backdrop of our show is about real transformation, about truly bridging beyond business as usual, as we've been talking about on the show, but it's about remaking industry into a force for sustainable wealth creation. My guest today is Jigar Shah. Jigar Shah, CEO of the Carbon War Room, an inspirational organization in my view that we all need to know more about. But I'd like to introduce today the conversation with Jigar with a few of what I might call what ifs, some facts and some what ifs, and I think these what ifs can be a beginning platform to understand the real potential that we're exploring here. And let me start with a composite of some facts and put them around three different situations and use that as our bridge. Situation one, the demand for food is estimated by 2050 to double by 2050 from where we are today, but yet global crop yields are falling. That's part A of it. Part B, families, if you can get this, families in the sub-Sahara spend a third of their income on charcoal for cooking, and indoor cooking is the fourth leading cause of death in women there. And part C, global temperatures, we know this, are on the rise as CO2, methane, greenhouse gas accumulations really put together in the atmosphere. And I ask, what if these feel like they're separate and distinct in some ways? What if we could simultaneously address all three problems, including getting a gigaton of carbon reduction per annum by 2025? In the words of an old-time movie I like so much, 12 Angry Men, it's possible. It's possible using biochar. Part of our conversation is about that today, and the Carbon War Room is at the leading edge of helping realize this potential in the world. More facts. Situation two. The global shipping industry is the equivalent of the sixth most polluting country. And it's the largest emitter of black carbon, a carcinogen linked to Arctic ice melting and 60,000 premature annual deaths in the U.S. alone. 85% of all cargo worldwide is transported by boat, by vessel, and the most toxic ships are a disproportionate part of the problem. 16 of the world's largest ships produce as much sulfur oxide as all the world's cars. What if we could simultaneously both transform and vitalize the shipping industry for the benefit of the planet and do so in a way that we got long-term financial health to the industry as well? Again, it's possible. And the Carbon War Room is on the front lines of this potential facilitating movement in this theater of action. And finally, today's situation three that I'm going to lead in with. Emissions from buildings, including electricity use, total over 20% of all carbon CO2 output. And the building sector represents the largest opportunity for cost-effective solutions to climate change. Retrofitting and redesigning buildings can eliminate 10% of emissions by 2020. Mayors and civic leaders are behind it. opportunity is there. They see it in terms of economic growth and jobs, but there are big gaps to be bridged. What if cities could get the access to capital they need? What if they could get a clear understanding of the financial markets in this situation? What if they could get the international network of support needed for this to happen? Again, it's possible, and the carbon war room is at hand. So you can begin to see why Jigar, in my mind, is such an important voice, and this is such an important force for the kind of change and transformation we have been exploring here on Zoomed. And by way of just a little more information and context about Jigar, he's CEO, of course, of the Carbon War Room. It is an initiative of entrepreneurs leading market-driven solutions to climate change. He was the renowned visionary behind the launch of Sun Edison Solar Energy Company 7 years ago. He's an expert on energy project finance, changing energy policy, working with stakeholders. He guides policymakers across the globe. He's got a previous base of experience in mergers and acquisitions, strategy, sales, and other lives, including BP Solar, and has worked with the U.S. Department of Energy. He's on numerous boards, Greenpeace, Ready Solar, Prometheus Institute, and other. Jigar, welcome. It is just a delight to have you with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Maybe since I took us to the dance floor with some examples and some realms where you're really involved, Jigar, maybe you can take us maybe up to the balcony a little bit more and more about maybe your story and an introduction to the Carbon War Room.
Well, I mean, I really appreciate the opportunity. I think that, you know, my own story is one of coming at this not from an environmentalist point of view, but from an engineering point of view. I did my mechanical engineering degree in the early 90s at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And what I realized there early on was that a lot of the things that we do extraordinarily inefficiently. And so whether it's cooling our homes or whether it's driving our cars or whether it's figuring out how we actually manufacture steel or cement or ship goods across the world, we tend to use things that were dependent upon very low cost, if not free, energy sources.
Mm.
And that as energy prices have gone up, the inefficiency of those systems have just crippled us. And so I look at this as a way to actually make our lives more efficient and more logical than the way we set it up the first time.
Well, and that's right. And we've been having conversation here about energy to some extent, and certainly around peak oil and the implications of that. But this, with the work that you're doing here, Jigar, really is taking this up even to a level beyond just peak oil. I mean, you're really connecting the dots here in many respects, as we've been suggesting, connecting the dots on the whole realm and the full pie, so to speak, of potential about how do we impact carbon in the world and climate change, but at the same time, how do we do this in a way that really engages the problems even more broadly than just that singular problem? Maybe you can say a little bit about the Carbon War Room in that standpoint.
Sure. Well, you know, the Carbon War Room was created by Sir Richard Branson, and he was joined by 10 other very prominent entrepreneurs from three continents to try to attack this problem. And I think where we start from is that we want to achieve gigaton level solutions, right? I mean, if you're going to tackle the largest problem facing humanity today, you've got to tackle it by going big.
Yes.
So the real question is that how do you go big? Well, one way is to get a global deal on emissions from Copenhagen, and we're all very hopeful that process, the COP process, will actually lead to binding targets. But I think increasingly it looks like governments around the world are probably going to be lagging indicators and not leading indicators of change. And so the real question is that if McKinsey and lots of other folks are saying that between 30 and 60% of all carbon emissions globally can be profitably, let me say that again, profitably offset with today's technologies, then why is that not happening? Right?
Well, that's a great question.
And that's really what we're trying to figure out across, electricity and transportation and buildings and industrial gases and agriculture. We're trying to figure out by sector, what is it that's not happening? And if you'll permit me, I mean, Bill Drayton said something which I thought was really interesting, which was the entrepreneur's job is not to take an idea and then implement it. That's what franchisees do. The entrepreneur is building something that is entirely new by constantly creating and testing and recreating and then testing and recreating again. And that's what we're trying to figure out. We believe that it's going to take an army of entrepreneurs just like we had during the web revolution and just like we had during the communications revolution. And so we want to harness the power of entrepreneurs to unlock market-driven solutions to climate change.
Well, so what you're really framing then is a different perspective. This is not just about tearing down or saying we just the world needs to fall apart so we can rebuild it from scratch. You're describing about remaking it here, but remaking it with entrepreneurs and new market solutions that can help drive this from within. Now, do I get that right?
That's right. I mean, we believe that this is going to be the largest wealth creation opportunity in our generation. Right. And so the real question is, how do we harness that wealth creation, that opportunity to doing well by doing good? Because our sense is that if you tell everybody around the world to sacrifice, just give a little bit for the collective good of the people, that we're just not going to move fast enough to realize to be able to offset, you know, the worst impacts of adaptation around climate change. So our sense is you're going to have to figure out a way to leverage capitalism and leverage just the entrepreneurial spirit to accelerate things as fast as we need them accelerated.
Mm-hmm. And so we're actually experiencing and recently experienced the healthcare situation in the nature in Washington where governments are actually trying to do this, and we got something done here. I'm not sure that it actually has the full entrepreneurial spirit to it, nor does it actually transform the view to wellness from a sickness care system. I mean, that's part of the conversation. But really, with the backdrop, I think part of what we've been talking about on Zoom, Terjigger, is that it really has gotten locked up. The polarities here really make it very difficult to get to the large-scale solutions. So you're really suggesting that we're pulling this into another dimension, and the Carbon War Room is accelerating or looking at these different realms around the different issues and how to really underpin it in a way to free the energy and the potential of it.
Yeah, I think if you think about the business sector. I mean, Tom Friedman had a great piece a couple of weeks ago, I think maybe about 8 or 9 days ago, where he cited the Kauffman Foundation statistics around job creation in this country, where the Kauffman Foundation's Carl Schramm basically said that virtually all net jobs created in the United States since 1980 were created by companies that were in business for less than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually all. Right? So if you're in a situation where you have huge budget deficits, which, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican is going to slow down your ability to use public investment dollars to solve these problems. And you have persistent unemployment rates. The only way to solve that problem is private capital. I think both Democrats and Republicans agree that we're going to have to figure out a way to unlock private investment. And okay. where would you have that private investment go? I think that the parts of the healthcare bill that made a lot of sense from this perspective, I mean, there's lots of them that did, but the one in particular that I'm thinking about is that, you know, President Obama talked about potentially actually providing an incentive to entrepreneurs to root out waste within the government healthcare system and actually get paid and compensated for finding that waste.
Got it. Okay. And that's that. And I can hear the music in my ears here, Jigar, but I think that's a fabulous opening to get us to the sense of the focus, as you're describing, harnessing the power of entrepreneurs to implement the market-driven solutions to the kinds of change that we need. Let's take a break here, Jigar. Let's pause for a moment, come back. Let's continue this conversation. I got a huge amount of areas I'd love to really go with this, but let's tune into it. Take a break, folks. Come back in a minute. Join Jigar, and we continue here. Thanks.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today with Jigar, the Carbon War Room, our conversation, and great introduction, Jigar, from where we started. And let me just come back to this, because I know it's the point of conversation with an awful lot of people I'm engaged with who, when we start talking about the issues and we talk about sustainability, we talk about energy, and the question comes up and the pushback to me always comes, well, we can just get technology to push our way out of this. It's all about technology, isn't it? And maybe you can give us a sense. What's your view on where does technology fit and how does it play out?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And, you know, Bjorn Lornberg, who has that famous TED Talk, you know, talks about this as well. And I think we have to recognize that since the Carter administration and maybe even years before that, we've actually spent billions of dollars on new technology. Today, it's those investments that have gotten us to where we are today with energy-efficient windows and much more efficient air conditioners and solar energy panels now that whose costs are actually below the cost of around 10% of all the energy produced today, which is, you know, produced with diesel and other high-cost electricity production methods have a cost-effective alternative with solar. You've got wind and all these other technologies. So the real question is not whether technology can get us to where we're going. It's more around, for the technologies that have already hit their price thresholds, why aren't they scaling up? Why are people continuing to make illogical decisions? I'll give you an example. Last week, Kansas City Power and Light just announced that their coal plant was going to come in, you know, way over budget, and that this was going to lead to about a 40% rate increase for the people that are within their territory. To suggest for a moment that we couldn't have used aggressive energy efficiency, targeted smart grid, targeted storage and distributed generation from cogeneration to Bloom Energy's fuel cells to solar, to do it at a far cheaper price than a 40% rate increase is preposterous.
Well, so what's the barrier there? I mean, we talk partly on this show about mindsets. We talk about mindsets that then put a rigidity into the system, and the system and the business as usual just refuses to change because it's vested in that. I mean, why is that a good example, Jigar?
Well, I think that, you know, maybe I can use a different example that we're working on in the shipping industry. What we find is that there are a set of market failures. And market failures can be everything from market power to information asymmetry to transaction costs. In the shipping industry, what we found out was that from Maersk to lots of other major shipping companies, they have done so much research that they knew that 35% of their bunker fuel usage could be cost-effectively offset simply by using technologies that had been invented in the 1970s and 80s. They didn't do it because they had no incentive to. The fuel costs that they were incurring were all passed through to customers. So then the question is, well, why aren't customers demanding these savings? And what they said to us was they just simply didn't know what the miles per gallon rating was of the ships that they were hiring.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, today, what's different between the 1980s and today is that today we have GPS tracking data that we can use to use with the bunker fuel receipt data to calculate, using third-party data, what the miles per gallon rating is without the participation of the shipping companies. So that's exactly what we did in partnership with RightShip in Australia. And today, now there's over 160 clients of RightShip that are using that data to save millions of dollars on their fuel consumption from shippers. And because of that, the shipping industry have thrown up their hands and said, well, if we can't beat them, join them. It looks like we're going to have to upgrade our ships because otherwise people won't use our shipping services.
Mm. But are we saying two things here? Are we talking about the market and the market failure? And is it really at the same time being driven by demand and an awareness in the demand side as part of this?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and awareness is one key point of this, but I think it's also important to note that, you know, there's a lot of history in our capitalist system around using incentives, around getting people, you know, tying their bonuses to certain activities, et cetera. And I think to assume for a moment that people are going to simply do the right thing because we've educated them without actually giving them an incentive to do the right thing, and in this case, you know, the Rio Tintos and the Tescos of the world are actually saving real money by choosing the ships that are more efficient, and the shipping owners are in fact losing real money because some of their most inefficient ships are simply not getting rented.
Right.
Was the incentive that moved things along. And I think, you know, going back to the Kansas City Power and Light example, that's not happening. The Public Service Commission's job is to actually protect the consumers from boondoggles that are passed through by utility companies. Mm-hmm. Now, the utility companies, you know, have every right to propose boondoggles because they're for-profit companies in many cases, and they're supposed to push it through, but the Public Service Commission is supposed to protect us. They're not because, you know, they've been convinced by utility companies that this, you know, newfangled technology around energy efficiency and smart grid is probably going to hurt the reliability of the grid. Well, you know, I mean, you can use scare tactics, but if you're the Public Service Commission, you're supposed to actually evaluate real data. And the way to do that is not just to educate them, but to actually sue them in court if they make a bad decision that leads to 40% rate increases.
So I'm hearing then multiple avenues here, Jigar, of intervening and to try to get this thing really impacted. It can be through lawsuits and courts to be able to bring some different view and structure to play and an orientation that way. I'm hearing that from the standpoint of business, we had Jeffrey Hollander on last week talking about his book about the responsibility revolution, that some mindsets, some executives, some companies, as you're describing, are taking a different, longer view and recognizing the larger responsibility, and then they're putting the demand on others, their suppliers, to do it. But I'm also hearing then there's another piece which is around the education informing the basic consumer. So there's multiple fronts here.
Well, there are any number of fronts. I mean, in the same way that there's any number of market failures, the real question is that, you know, how do we actually systemically look at each of the sectors and figure out which tactics to use in that sector? So, for instance, in energy efficiency, it's actually quite similar to what I did at Sun Edison with the team, with my co-founders there, around really freeing up institutional finance. The real market failure in energy efficiency is that nobody wants to spend their discretionary money on energy efficiency. You know, I had a long conversation with somebody from the White House the other day, and they said, well, Jigar, you know, we just don't understand why energy efficiency doesn't take off. It's a 20% rate of return. And so I asked him, I said, you know, how old is your house and what kind of windows do you have? And he said, well, I've got single pane glass. I said, you know, your president provided you a 30% tax credit to upgrade those things and to achieve a very high rate of return. And he said, well, I've got kids in private school and I've got my retirement savings and all these things. And I said, well, You know, Walmart has the exact same problem. You know, they want to buy a company in Brazil or they want to do something here and there. And so energy efficiency becomes just not a high priority for their discretionary money.
And well, so he's also saying to me, to use your words on that I think you talk about so well, I mean, we have a status quo. We have a system as it is, and we're living within that. We go to sleep on this in some respects, don't we?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we can do here. I just think that we've got to assume that people are going to act in their self-interest, mm-hmm. and not that they're just going to, you know, achieve a higher calling. Mm-hmm. I just think, in general, what we did in the solar industry, which is what we're doing in energy efficiency now, is that we gave people a choice. We went to Walmart and Staples and Whole Foods and Costco and others and said to them, you know, we have a pot of money. You can use it to put solar on your roof at no cost to you and lock in your electricity rates for the next 20 years, or you can choose not to do it and we'll use this money to work on, you know, your competitors and other people's buildings. Under that situation, everyone signed up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But when you go to them and say, we're going to generate a 20% rate of return for you, which is a huge rate of return, but we need you to invest the capital, many CFOs just say, that's not our core business. That's not mm-hmm. what we do. We don't want to get into the power generation business. And instead of fighting that through education, sometimes it's better just to understand what their rationale is for why they're not doing it in that particular case, like energy efficiency, and find sort of a non-balance sheet, non-recourse financial product that they can use. And there's several to choose from. You know, in energy efficiency, there's the PACE bond, the property tax assessed clean energy bonds. You've got utility on-bill financing payments. You've got, you know, folks that are doing fantastic work around securitization. So you actually have three or four really good models to choose from, but scaling them up and actually doing the heavy lifting and rolling up the sleeves to write the document sets takes time.
Very interesting, Jigar. What I'm really hearing then is you're really talking about the leverage into the system here and finding out where that is and really then looking at the capital situation and the market to be able to create that kind of change. Feels very, in some respects, ingenious to really do this, and it's not out of a do-gooder. You're coming in with a sense of leverage and impact, and how do you really move this? It's very interesting.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I think that to assume that everybody in the world is out to get us, I think, is probably not going to be our most productive way of saving 17 or 18 gigatons of carbon by 2020, mm-hmm. which is, you know, really the goal of the environmental movement by then. You know, I think, and we're clearly, you know, moving towards that same exact goal. And I think that to get the institutional finance folks to play, we can use heavy government regulation, which, you know, we're not against. But if, as you were talking about, you know, the Democrats and Republicans can't get together to try to figure out how to, you know, pass the equivalent of the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act and others that Republicans in the past have been huge, huge leaders on, then, you know, we're going to have to do it from the other direction, figure out a way to get these institutional investors to realize that they need to be doing stuff that's in their best interest and their investors' best interest.
And then you've identified a number of theaters that you're really doing this kind of investigation, this consideration. We're talking about some here, electricity, but in transport, in terms of the vessels, but you're talking about the built environment that I mentioned. You're talking about industry in general, land use, emerging economies, carbon management. You have a number of, you call these theaters, I think, do you not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we've set up the Carbon War Room in a Winston Churchill-like fashion where you're bringing all this data into one central location and evaluating that data and then figuring out how to prioritize our actions. So we, you know, sort of continued on the analogy of the war room into theaters. But what we're really looking at is we're investigating all those areas for institutional finance and market failure opportunities that we can solve to achieve gigaton-level solutions. And when we find them, then we actually activate an operation. So shipping was our first one, energy efficiency was our second one. We're now looking at doing biochar, and you know we're also working on active climate intervention techniques as well that around the governance structure of how we actually determine when we can pursue any of those things.
And so it's really interesting the way that you're looking at the leverage and how you're coming in this market. This is it's interesting because we've talked a lot about Jigar, about sort of the mindsets at play. And it seems to me that in the predominant mindset we're dealing with in the Western world, and much of what we have in the evolution is a very achiever-based, it's a very capitalist-based mindset. I'm really hearing you tuning directly into that and conveying people from where they are to where they might be. And I think it's brilliant in doing so. Let's take a break. I hear the music, Jigar, coming in the back of my mind here. Let's pick this up. I'd like to have a look. My guests would, listeners, I'm sure, want to know more about biochar as an example too. So
sure.
Let's come back. Let's take a minute, take a pause, and continue the conversation. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today. Title of our show, The Carbon War Room. Our focus, our guest, CEO Jigar Shah. We're talking about the nature of the work of the war room, the possibilities, the potential, the transformation involved, and beyond business as usual. Jigar, let's take this down. I opened with some examples sort of on the dance floor, took us up to the balcony, and I think you've responded beautifully on that. But let's give some examples to our listeners about some of the work here and how to make this tangible and how you bring the stakeholders together and get the kind of impact. Maybe take it and give us an example. Is there a good one to start with?
Sure. Let me talk a little bit about biochar.
Yeah.
Because I think it's critical, and I think you opened the segment really talking about the demand for food doubling by 2050 and, you know, crop yields going down. I think what we're finding is that in fact the natural cycle of how we actually create soil means that carbon actually gets trapped in the soil as well. When you have natural decomposing of organic matter. What folks have figured out within the academic community is how you actually replicate this at a much faster rate. And so you're really able to lock in carbon and sequester it through a pyrolysis approach, which is basically, you know, smoldering biomass without oxygen to create heat as opposed to burning it and creating CO2. And in the process, instead of having ash at the end, you actually have a very, very rich fertilizer that traps carbon and actually puts carbon back into the soil, which has been missing because we've been focused on nitrogen and phosphorus levels in our soil for much of the Midwest and the U.S., et cetera. And so you can kill two birds with one stone with biochar, where you actually take biomass, you don't put CO2 back into the air by burning it, but you actually create a fertilizer while still creating the same amount of heat as you would create by burning it, and then using that heat to, you know, create electricity or whatever else you were going to use that heat for, whether it be process heat or other things. So you've got this opportunity that's massive. I mean, literally, this alone could save multiple gigatons of carbon globally. And if we're only going to have to, not only, but if we're going to have to do about 17 or 18 by 2020, then this could get you 20% of the way there.
Wow. So, and say more about this then. Where is this in play? Where is it that the potential to launch this, to bring the entrepreneurial spirit at play? Give us that side of the equation. I hear this and the potential. This is the scale that you talked about in the beginning.
Well, the beauty of entrepreneurs is they get started regardless of what the barriers are. I mean, these guys are, and women are passionate. And what we found is that you've got entrepreneurs in Central America, entrepreneurs in Italy, entrepreneurs in India, because biochar units can be everything from a $20 paint can all the way to a continuous feed biochar unit made by, you know, large industrial companies that, you know, can cost several million dollars. Even like, for instance, I was talking to the city of Glasgow, and they're looking at using a biochar unit for all their wood waste and all their methane, their animal waste and other waste products to create this this great fertilizer. But some of the barriers that they're finding is, for instance, none of the international treaties have actually recognized biochar as an approach that actually sequesters carbon. So if someone wanted to buy offsets from Europe or the U.S., they couldn't buy offsets in the biochar area right now very easily.
Hmm.
So that's one of the barriers that they've got. You know, some of the other barriers are that not all biochar looks and feels the same. I mean, you can imagine quality is a big deal here, because one person has a biochar unit doesn't mean that their end product of fertilizer is going to be the same as the next guy down the road. And so how do you create standards such that, you know, the one guy who's got a very high quality product can get a premium for his product over the guy who's got a medium quality product?
And so what is the business-as-usual system? How do they respond to the potential of biochar here?
Well, I think what they say is there's a couple of things, right? The first thing that they say is, well, you know, we get that this is happening, but we're just so used to people, you know, burning things, and burning things are a lot easier. And I said, well, you know, I mean, that's true. But in fact, when you have the ability to create paint cans that are $20 all the way to multiple millions of dollars, you actually have the same level of scalability as you have from something that can be grilled. And it matters because people, you know, like families in Dakar, for instance, spend an average of 30% of their income on charcoal. While deforestation continues and poor indoor air quality and other things are happening, this eliminates the healthcare issues. It eliminates these pieces. And so one of the things that we've been doing is working with, for instance, you know, the UN and some folks who actually work very carefully on these issues for the bottom of the pyramid, and convincing them that these are all related, that to give folks access to clean energy actually helps you on the healthcare side. It also helps you on the income side, because some of them are spending so much money already on charcoal. And so the market failure here is really in one area, the standards, but the other area is tying together development efforts within UNHCR and other UN agencies and the World Bank, et cetera, to healthcare and some of the other pieces that that are inextricably linked to the solution set.
So it's connecting the dots here, and it's bridging beyond just the silos of the way some of these issues are dealt with and starting to merge those and bring those or bring those together collectively. And, Jigar, can you talk about the process, about how would you engage the stakeholders in a process like this to do that work, to bridge across those lines? What would be entailed, and what would be the carbon war room role?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we're holding this. Just to give you an example, we're holding this this exclusive conference summit in D.C. April 21st and 22nd. That's featuring Richard Branson and others. So we've got a number of entrepreneurs that are coming. They're matched with corporates, NGOs, government leaders, as well as academic leaders, and we're putting them in a room, heavy facilitation, and we're not telling them what the answer should be. What we're saying is here's the opportunity. You know, in energy efficiency, we can save 5 gigatons of carbon per year in 2020 if we actually just scale up the energy efficiency deployment. Here are 15 or 20 barriers that have come out of the great work done by ACEEE and Alliance to Save Energy and Rocky Mountain Institute and all these people. Why don't you guys, who are, you know, wealth creators, job creators, sit in a room and through facilitation, tell us what you think the top 5 barriers are? You know, in priority order, that are hurting you guys from creating more jobs and creating more wealth. And they come to the table.
Mm-hmm. So it's come to the table, get them into the room, and to bridge beyond the typical bounds of this, and to use the thought process collectively to stimulate within us to think about how we might bridge new ideas and embrace new opportunities and these new solutions into the old system, and to bring that entrepreneurial spirit and passion to bear with really a fundamental dollars and cents value to it.
Well, and give them a voice.
Yeah, stimulating possibility.
Well, and give them a voice. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, in the political situation that we've got going on, not only in the U.S., but also in countries around the world, if you don't have a full-time government relations person and a lobbyist, it's hard to get your voice out.
Mm-hmm.
And what, one of the things we're doing is giving these people a voice and going to entrepreneurs and saying, look, I mean, is a price on carbon the most important thing for you? I mean, I think it's a very important piece, but what do they think? You know, what are things the government can do? I was talking to, you know, somebody from the Department of Energy this morning, and I was saying to them that, you know, the biggest challenge that I hear from people is liquidity, getting enough financing into these projects, not the interest rate. So we should be focusing more on getting more financing engaged than the interest rate, because that's an important thing, and that's because I talked to some entrepreneurs who told me that. And so once you get their priority list and their strategy, then it's about trying to get, you know, ourselves as a nonprofit and others to line up around their priorities. Because our sense is the reason why we got to where we did today was because of a lot of great work by a lot of great firms, but one of the things that helped us along was all the wealth that was created in people's stock portfolios in 2007. There was this frenzy, if you remember correctly, on climate change solutions around solar and wind companies and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And when that occurred, people got really interested. You know, I mean, I was at an RNC briefing the other day, and there were about 35 prominent donors to the RNC, and we were just talking because they were asking me my opinion about climate change and wealth creation, and I realized that 6 of those people were working full time on climate change solutions, solar air conditioning, other types of technologies, and I asked them, you know, what do you think about you know, what your party's doing in this area? And they said, well, you know, it's not really something that we support, but, you know, we've got to figure out a way to change the narrative, and we're not quite sure how to do that. And I think the challenge is that there's a lot of people who focus entirely on policy and not necessarily on focusing on unlocking private capital, which policy could be an important tool of, but then there's also market failures you can solve as well. So our process involves listening. Once we get the answers, then we go to our crack team and our research and intelligence group, and they actually investigate all of this stuff fully, figure out what it would take. You know, do we need to partner with NGOs? Do we need to actually figure out a way to do a lawsuit-type strategy? How do we actually utilize the tools that we have to attack this problem? We create a business plan, an operational plan. We work with a certain subset of the original folks who had given us suggestions to ask them whether they think this approach would work. And then we help fund it with you know, our foundation partners and our entrepreneurial partners to implement the change.
And in the words, I think, Jigar, we've been using on the show, we've talked some about the nature of the change, and it's like a gearing up process. We've talked about business and sustainability, and the gear is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I would point to what you're describing as the gear 5 view, which is you're looking at the broad issue, you're pulling people together, you cross-sector on this, and you've got a particular focus of really bringing the private capital and the market-based opportunity out of this. It's a rich part of our conversation we haven't had at the table, and I'm appreciative for that. Jigar, I hear the music in the background here. Let's take a short break and get the motion back here, because I think we've got another final segment here, and I'd love to continue this and bring a few other points to bear. So let's take a short break, listeners. Come back in a moment. Carbon War Room, some thoughts, and bring it together here beyond business as usual, as you're hearing. Come back in a moment. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. Women in business today face many challenges in advancing their careers and reaching their goals. There are corporate executives, entrepreneurs, and business owners that have made their mark in business. Now you can learn their secrets and tips. Listen to Head Over Heels Women's Business Radio as your host Bonnie Marcus explores how to thrive in the business environment, navigate the workplace, and climb the corporate ladder. Listen live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and effectively promote yourself today.
The Marsh Engel Show. Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engel Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today. Jigar Shah, we're talking about harnessing the power of entrepreneurs to implement market-driven solutions to climate change, the issues we've been bringing it to our attention here on Zoomed. Jigar, let me go back, pick up on where we've been here, and I'm curious from an organizational standpoint, with really taking on the business as usual the way you are, what are you finding? What are the challenges you're finding as an organization in taking this convening, facilitating role you're describing coming up in Washington?
Well, I think that, you know, part of what we're trying to do is actually reach an absolute level of carbon reductions, right? I mean, and so I think the vast majority of corporations around the world today are really focused more on incremental change, right? Because you can imagine when you've got thousands and thousands of employees, it's quite difficult for you to think about, you know, how to revolutionize your business until, you know, somebody sort of forces you to do that. And so, you know, the real challenge that we have is trying to make sure that people don't get stuck in incremental progress, but in fact actually really start attacking energy waste. And that means that some people are, you know, going to win and some people are not going to win in this new world. And I think it's critically important for us to allow that to happen in the same way we allowed that to happen in the media space and the telecom space and lots of other spaces in the last 20 years.
So that's the reality sense of the market space. But by the same token, what I heard and the way that you were approaching the biochar and the example I gave in the beginning, I mean, it's a win-win-win from the health standpoint, a win from the environmental standpoint, a win from an entrepreneurial standpoint. So simultaneously, you're talking about bridging this in a very positive win-oriented interest way. But by the same token, if there isn't change in some quarters, that will be affected and felt.
Yeah, but I think this is important to realize, right? So I was in Lithuania last week, and the richest guy in Lithuania makes his money off of fertilizer. You know, he gets gas from Gazprom. 70% of his cost of goods sold is the natural gas from Gazprom, and so, you know, he manages that risk very well and tries to figure that stuff out. The more the biochar is successful, the less gas he's going to bring in from Gazprom, which makes the Russians upset, and the less the less money he probably makes, unless he's the one who invests in biochar. And so I think it's important for us to know that there are some players, particularly in smaller countries, where the entrenched players are going to lose money. And unless they invest in the solutions, which many of them come late to the game on. And I think it's important for us to be okay with that. I mean, this is Schumpeter's sort of creative destruction. That's why the new replace the old.
Right, interesting. So this is where I think many of us find ourselves in the business as usual and running up against that. What are you finding here then, Jigar, for living in that environment? One is recognizing it, but then living in it, we're facing this, and I got to imagine you're facing pushback in some quarters as well from those that don't want to change for that very reason.
Well, absolutely. But I think that the way in which we solve that is to get people to get involved in infrastructure. You know, infrastructure has been underinvested in our country for many, many years, and people are making up for lost time. You know, there's a lot of folks who complain through op-eds and, you know, calling the editor and calling their congressman when there are actually, you know, established methods by which you actually are supposed to complain, whether it's at the Public Service Commission when you want to kill a coal plant, or whether it's with the local county board when you're trying to kill a new highway expansion because you wanted that money to be transferred into mass transit. It is amazing to me that what I've learned is that one individual can actually change the entire direction of what's happening in a state. So I'll give you an example. I've got a good friend of mine in New Hampshire named Laura Richardson, who one day woke up and said, you know what, we need clean energy in New Hampshire. And, you know, she started the New Hampshire Sustainable Energy Association. She, you know, busted her butt to get around the state and get a renewable portfolio standard passed. They tried to cut her out of a couple of strategic meetings, but because she lives so far away from the capital, she lives about an hour and 20-minute drive, she always comes early, and so she happened to make the meeting anyway, and, you know, a lot of backroom deals. And it was because of her persistence, and then, of course, you know, hundreds of people that supported her, but her persistence, that New Hampshire now has some of the strongest rules in the country on renewable portfolio standards and solar carve-outs and lots of other things. But that didn't happen because she just wrote a bunch of letters, right? I mean, that happened because she actually showed up.
Yeah, that's right. So you're really signaling the power of one. But I guess what advice would you really have then for our listeners in engaging our own leadership, the individual leadership, recognize the power of one? I mean, what's the, you know, what collectively would you suggest to them and out of the learnings that you're having at the Carbon War Room?
Well, yeah, and what we're finding is that the power of one really does matter, and you just have to pick something that really speaks to you. And so, you know, if you're passionate about mass transit or electric vehicles or, you know, renewable energy or energy efficient buildings, find an issue that's passionate for you. Learn the information, much of which, as you pointed out correctly, are on the websites of the leading nonprofits around the country as well as around the world, and it doesn't, frankly, take more than 5 or 6 hours to get up to speed on some of this stuff, and then you know, be the strongest advocate with your neighbors, with your city council members, with your mayor, with your, you know, your state representatives. You know, what I'm finding is that infrastructure doesn't get built on the backs of individuals without an open process. There's always an open process. It may not be heavily advertised, but there's an open process. If you attend that open process, you can actually make huge changes. And I think it is very important for us to recognize that there are thousands of people around this country that want to make big changes, not millions, actually. The millions don't exist, but thousands do exist. And those thousands actually could single-handedly change the direction that this country is going in if they learn how to play within the rules and figure out a way to get it done.
Chigurh, beautiful. I mean, you really just echoed back what we've been talking about here. One is there's building understanding, and we can get it in a short period of time. And then it's really getting in the game. It's really taking action and personally getting into the field, as you've done here. Chigurh, I appreciate it. I can hear the music in the background. Delight to have you on here today. Again, applause, much applause for your good work. And I point you to the folks to the website and to carbonwarroom.com to be able to get a sense of the broad picture, the Creating Climate Wealth Conference that Chigurh really suggested, and that's coming up here in April. Take a look at that. Chigurh, thanks for being on today. Really, really a pleasure to have you here.
It was really my pleasure. Thanks for the great work you're doing.
Okay, well, thank you. And audience, the conversation continues. We invite you to continue to give us feedback. We are the distilling voice of the Great Transition, as we've been talking about. We also invite you, as you have suggestions, to other guests like Chigurh, who are really at the front line of being able to engage in the kinds of change with the kinds of depth, the kind of perspective, the richness, and the passion that Chigurh really, I think, shows in getting in the game here. Send me a message if you have it, have ideas, and that's JDS@avastoneconsulting.com. We want to live with it. Have a great week, and again, Chigurh, thanks for the great work and the contribution of the Carbon War Room. Good luck with the conference. We hope to see you there, listeners, next week. Thanks a lot, John. John Schmidt out here. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.